Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're going to start our dive into the shiniest of all of the Space Marines, but also the most secretive faction, the Grey Knights. And we're going to do that by not talking about the Grey Knights.
At all.
Basically, yeah. But we are going to talk about the flight of the Eisenstein.
Cool story.
Yeah, so it's
one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, so we're good. And the actions of what are known as the Knights Errant. Before we begin, as always, please like and comment on the cast. We've had an explosion recently in viewers, and it really has been remarkable. That's because we got top ranked, like even higher than ever on Spotify and on Apple. We are now, I believe, the top ranked 40K podcast.
So, Ba-ding!
Suck it, everybody else, because I'm competitive.
But the thing is that it's because, and I hate saying this, is the pandering, like nobody's
don't
business.
Say it, don't.
But it's because of you.
Yeah.
But it is though, because the way that the metrics work with you guys subscribing, you guys putting comments out, it puts us out to other people. So please keep doing that.
You guys are doing an incredible job as listeners, and it really does mean a lot, because these programs, these companies, they understand that people try to cheat the algorithm. And because of what we're doing, it's so organic that we actually get promoted amongst other stuff. We're getting new users. This is great. So thank you for all of you who've left the comments, especially those of you who've written some of the funnier ones. Please keep doing it. If you write a comment and it's about like the audio not being good, you notice I don't post it. It's because go back and re-listen to that episode now. We've now fully remastered episodes 1 through 30, and I should have the rest done but within the next couple of weeks. And this is early September that I'm recording this. So if in the future you're like, what was the audio issues you talked about? Yes.
Ready for old man reference of the week? Every time you say remaster, I think, who's the master from The Last Dragon? Yeah, that's what, 82?
Dear God. Dear God. I was just going with remaster like they do the
Bruce Leroy and Show Enough.
I was going with remaster like they do all the audio from the music you used to listen to. Because the guys recorded it on 8-track.
In this cast, I'm about to get the glow. And the four people that know what I'm talking about will be excited that I said that.
It's all right. Better than the last episode where we had talked about how I hadn't seen Avatar for a while.
Don't get me started.
If you want to interact with us or anyone about this type of topic, we do have a Discord. The link's in the notes. The Discord has really grown massively. At time of recording, we were over 1,000 members. By the time of publish or whenever you, the listener listening to this, who knows? But it's grown a lot. It's been really great because it's been a spot that originally, I think, started out just a way for people to interact with us, tell us stuff we got wrong, tell us the things that they want to hear us do more about, which is 100% still there.
But it's now everything.
Yeah, now we have people who are new to the hobby looking for advice on painting, modeling, etc., advice on gameplay, advice on anything, but also people talking about video games, cough, cough, Space Marine 2. This stuff's become, it's really blown up and been a great area for that. So if you're looking for a place to interact around that, or if you just want to ask people questions of, hey, I just finished, you know, the Night Lord trilogy. What should I get into next? And getting, you know, real reviews from other people I love Discord.
It's real reviews from people that are passionate about it, though. You know what I mean? It's not a, hey, you should do this because it's relevant. No, it's.
And it's also not Reddit or people are trying to get upvoted. This is why personally I like Discord so much, because maybe there are Discord rewards. I'm also 43, so I don't pay attention to everything. But the idea is that Discord's a really great place to interact, because you don't get anything for having higher engagement. You just get the reward of people talking to you. So it's great. It is, of course, I always bring this up, completely free to join. I bring it up for two reasons. One, so more of you join because it's free to join. And two, for anyone listening who has a Discord they charge for, shame on you.
You've really upgraded from fuck you. I like that.
Because one guy made a comment, like, can you like curse less? And I went, yeah, that's fair. I do. I have a 5-year-old. My wife says the same thing of, you know, your son just used the F word with perfect context. And my response was it perfect context though? All right, I'll stop. Done. Yeah. Perfect context. I've heard him do it a few times where I was like, oh, buddy, like, I don't know what to do here. Anyway, also on that note, as we talked about earlier, there's also a link to our Patreon. If you like what we're doing and you want to help us kind of continue to expand, Patreon's the best way for us to do this. You can come on and just subscribe to it. It's $5 a month. That money goes into stuff like, you know, audio equipment. We've hired an audio engineer to help us with cleaning up the podcast a little bit. In the future, we're going to be stepping into YouTube and some other areas, you know, some new websites being made.
Screw this.
It helps us.
We're planning on doing a live cast. Thank you very much. John's face just dropped as soon as I said that because he argues with me the entire time.
Here's the thing. We're planning on it between now and the end of time. it's a matter of like,
he'll pass away before.
Yeah, there's not a date. That's my official on it. Like, yeah, we will do it. But this is something this is where the Patreon really does help us out. Because the truth is, I'm sure you can't, guys. It's a free time thing. It's just, I don't have the time to do a lot of this stuff. So being able to hire someone to do some of this stuff just makes my life a lot easier. And the Patreon's how we're doing this. So for those of you who have given money to the Patreon, I cannot thank you enough. And I really do hope that the improved audio has meant a lot to you because you're the ones who paid for it. And for those of you who are looking to help us out, it's the best way to do it. Now, last little piece though, because Brad's here, is Brad's old and he plays a lot of 40K.
You downgraded so much here.
It's not. I'm joking. I like to tease Brad. Brad is a coach of 40K. He's also one of the best 40K players in the globe and has been for a long time. So there you go. There's like one out of four episodes. I give you a lot of credit. We'll start this one off positive. Yeah, Brad has had a lot of successful experience both playing the game, but more importantly, also coaching the game. Brad has coached a lot of very successful tournament players. So for you looking for that
isn't the measure of success on that. So I want you to people.
Yeah, exactly.
The game, but everything else.
What I mean by that is that people, a lot of them, everyone says they want to be a coach. And to me, being a good coach is the ability to take the elite and make them good. Because if you can do that, you can also take people who are new and make them better. You understand the game at a higher level. The thing you don't want in a coach is a coach who has a ceiling. That's always been the issue. Because then you have to change coaches partway through and you end up falling behind.
One of my favorite parts is the fact that in the notes, we don't even get my line from this. You don't even write it in anymore.
Which one?
Where to reach me.
It's right there. You can reach him at, it's underscored.
Yeah.
I leave it blank because I'm not even typing
it. Oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Yeah, or just go to our website, the40klorecast.com, or go to Brad's website, www.doesnotexist.com.
I'm just really going back into my
what is this, 1998? Like, oh yeah, I don't have a web page yet. Yeah, but
I'm working on it.
Yeah,
I have a team of experts.
Top men are working on it.
Top men.
Top men. Oh, that's gonna be taken out of context and
as well it should.
There we go. There's a
just fun clip thing. I just assume every dumb thing I say gets instantly clipped. I just accept it and move on.
It's fine. All right, on to the cast. So we're gonna start with really, I would argue, the best book. It's one, if it's not the best, the top two books of the Horus Heresy, The Flight of the Eisenstein.
It's so good.
And Horus Rises might be the best.
Horus Rises is, you have to put it by itself, though, because it's the beginning of an epic.
Yeah, I'm just saying The Flight of Eisenstein, I felt, was very well written, action-packed. You need the other information, unfortunately, for it.
But yes, but once you set the, that's what I'm saying. The Horus Rising sets the stage. But like as a standalone tale, this is fantastic.
Yeah. I have one complaint in The Flight of Eisenstein, and it's not the book. It's the complaint that the drop-off after Flight of Eisenstein's pretty aggressive. Like, if you read the books in order, you read Flight of Eisenstein, and you are super excited. And I think the book that released after that is Dark Angels, which is the story of Lion, where you're like, it's not a bad book, but it's not this exciting. So anyway, Flight of Eisenstein. So we covered this, but it's been about a year. So, and we also covered it last week. So just a very, very quick recap. Onto the Horus Heresy. Space Marine factions were unknowingly, to half of them, being split between loyalist and traitor. Horus decides he's going to make a play at one point and kind of deal a decisive blow to the ones who are not going to join him.
In a two-part deal, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but before he could do that, he had to look internal to prevent challenges from within. So Horus needed, not only did he have to take a swing at the loyalist legions. He also had to remove any loyalists from within his own. In order to do this, he had to know who within his own legion were loyal. This leads us to the warrior lodges, which were, as we discussed last time, when Brad's like, they're a great idea. No, they weren't.
They were a great idea. I stand by this.
Name one time they worked out well.
I didn't say they worked. I said they were a great idea.
That's like saying idea. It's a, okay, no great idea has 100% fail rate.
I mean, there was warrior lodges in some of the loyalist chapters, and they're fine.
No, all of the White Scars turned traitor. They had to kill them all.
I'm just that's saying. That's
the sound of Brad drinking wine great, and solace.
A great idea.
Like the only ones who didn't have a problem were the ones who didn't have them.
Look, man, they just wanted to give talks between people as equals. Like, and that sounds like a goddamn great idea.
We're both people who like to talk too much, but apparently there's a limit. And the warrior lodges are that. So anyway.
Apparently, if you get a bunch of Marines together, all of their ideas go into how can we kill everybody that's not here right
yeah.
now?
Yeah. So anyway,
my bad. Yeah.
The warrior lodges were in reality spy rings. That's what they really were. It was a place where people would sit around and discuss things, and like they were trying to kill everybody else. Yeah, and later it was effectively, but there were it was billed. This is very KGB-esque to me. Is how I always viewed them, which is why Brad's now is groaning. You guys can't see it because he knows I'm right. Because the idea of the warrior lodge was we're all going to talk openly, but we're going to have spies in there who are going to plant certain things to see what everyone responds to and then mark down what their response was.
Look, the warrior lodges were a goddamn good idea.
Made up by the KGB.
I'm not saying that it worked out. I'm choking to death here on the suckiness of how this all worked out.
Yeah, you had a great play. You really believed in this, and I'm just ripping it to shreds because it's fun.
I did believe. I still believe.
Yeah, it was you're on team KGB.
You're not wrong, but also I did think it was a good idea.
So Horus has to have a plan to deal with those who are loyal to the Emperor. So Horus tells all of his legions that there's a rebellion in Istvan III, and he's going to bring all of his legions together to quell it.
With a pause real quick, the only thing I don't like about both the Dropside Massacre and the Istvan III is the fact that they went, this is this mysterious thing that no one's ever heard about, and it definitely takes the combined forces of multiple.
That's just three. So the thing is, Istvan III requires the combined force to handle one planet. Istvan IV is when they told everyone, hey, some guys turned traitor. You got to come deal with it. So that's why you were able to bring a lot more legions.
I'll give you a stamp. The Dropside Massacre makes more sense. Yeah.
This one was kind of like, we
are overkilling the shit on a random rebel. Why are we all here?
Well, and that's why I think it's Garvel Loken or Iakin sniffs it out.
It was Loken.
Loken sniffs it out.
Because it makes no sense. Yeah. Like, literally, again, why are we here?
This is also why this book's so well done. In reality, what he's going to do, though, Horus, is he's not going to deploy his entire legion on Istvan. He's going to deploy select groups of each legion. And you can guess, you know, who these select groups are made up of.
And he's going to kill the shit out of them.
The funny part, by the way, is Istvan III was not in rebellion at all. They were just going about their daily lives.
There's nobody there. That's why it's so easily snipped out, because it's just a random planet. Hey, guys.
Yeah. Oh, hey, that's a lot of ships in orbit. What's going on?
Yeah, it's Tuesday. We're celebrating Bread Day.
Yeah. And so Horus's plan is to invade. And then once all his internal loyalists are down there, they hit him with a Life Eater virus, which we've never talked about before. So I wonder, or maybe we did, but it was over a year ago. So, but we're doing it again because I like the Life Eater virus. First off, it's not a virus. Viruses couldn't spread.
Guys in Death Guard is made up of the Life Eater.
Well, it can't be a virus because of the way viruses spread. This is a bacteria. So I'm just going to say it right now. It would have to be a bacteria.
Science?
Yeah, science because GW, like, again, just call it a Life Eater bacteria. Who cares?
Or you could just say it's magic.
Yeah, or the Life Eater. Who cares? Anyway, what it does is...
Sorry you didn't like the way that the magic worked, John.
Oh, call it magic, and I have no complaints. That's the thing. That's what I've always said.
Don't say that shit while I'm drinking.
Yeah. You call it magic. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's magic. That works. It's when they're like, oh, it's a virus. That's not how viruses replicate. So anyway, the Life Eater virus, it's not that, it infects, and what it does is all organic matter, as soon as it touches it, breaks it down into its most basic components. And apparently one of our basic components is methane. Again,
true story.
It's not. No, not true story
it's
at all.
It's one of.
It's not a main one.
I didn't say it was a main. I said it's one.
Mostly carbon.
I'm technically correct.
The virus eats you and turns you into methane. This is why I say it's got to be a bacteria, because in theory, it would be consuming matter and then turning it into methane. And we have people in our Discord who actually are biologists, and they're going to correct me if I'm wrong here or tell me I'm right. Either way. But anyway, the planet effectively, all the matter begins to just dissolve and turn into methane. And then you hit the planet with a match, you know, a la 80s action movie, and the entire planet just burns. Instantly.
So, also, a bummer for the people that live there that had nothing to do with
it. Yeah, it's a nice 1-2 combo of murder. So you either get eaten by the virus and turned into methane, or if you somehow duck the virus, the entire planet catches fire, which they don't cover this because no one ever does with fire explosions. Fire consumes oxygen. The reason, like, whenever you see a movie and someone, like, there's a big fire explosion, they duck behind something. Yeah, that's great. The fire will suck the air out of your lungs. I know this I do know is a fact. It'll literally pull the air out of your lungs and you will suffocate. So I digress. Oh, you know what though? They had they have spacesuits, so they're probably okay, right? They're vacuum sealed, Brad. They're vacuum sealed spacesuits.
I mean, vacuum sealed, so you couldn't get a fly inside of it.
Yeah, and with an oxygen supply, so they could totally survive this thing.
In a filter, three of them.
Yeah. Anyway.
Three of them.
As we were discovering in the last couple casts, this is a key one, is Mortarion. Mortarion had converted most of his legion over from Terran-born to Barbarous-born. And at the time of Istvan, he sent all of his Terran-born down to Istvan because they were terrible, except for one guy. And the one guy is Nathaniel Garrow.
His boy.
Who he loved. And as we talked about last week, but if you didn't listen, very, very funny story happened where Mortarion was convinced Garrow, who was born on Terra, is maybe the most loyal space marine
ever.
Ever. I mean, it's him and Gilliman. You know?
he should be on the posters.
That's what he is. And Mortarion's like, no, he's totally going to side with us. Brings him into a Warrior Lodge meeting.
He's also told multiple times not to do
this. Oh, yeah. Everyone tells Mortarion, Garrow's, we cannot keep Garrow. And Mortarion's like, you guys are crazy. Garrow sees it. He's the guy who does nothing but talk about his love of the Emperor. He's going to turn on the Emperor if I just ask him correctly. Mortarion brings Garrow to a Warrior Lodge meeting, at which point he yells at all the Warrior Lodge members and says, you guys are traitors to the Emperor.
You forget it. We said this last week, and it's one of my favorites. Garrow sneaks out.
After. Yeah. He yells at everyone, tells them you're all idiots and you're all traitors to the Emperor, and then sneaks out the door.
You forgot the best part. You're idiots, you're traitors to the Emperor, and I will stop you if you try to move forward with any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then he sneaks off.
And he sneaks out through the world's creakiest door, I assume.
Yeah.
It's just like...
And everybody just went, so that guy's getting shot tomorrow.
Yeah. Right? Like, can we just go shoot him now? And Mortarion, of course, goes, no, guys, it's okay. He's cool.
Yeah,
trust
me.
Yeah, he's cool. Mortarion brought a cop to a drug deal. And the guy pulled out his badge and said, I'm a cop. And Mortarion went, don't worry, guys. He's totally cool.
He's totally good. I got this. It's no big deal.
And for those of you who don't know what a drug deal is, when Brad and I grew up, drugs were illegal.
However, Garrow got hurt, and that saved his life.
Yeah. So anyway, fast forward a little bit. Before the events of Istvan, Garrow gets in a fight with Slaanesh demons, gets his leg broken, and actually has to have his leg replaced with a cybernetic leg.
You're down selling a little bit.
It was broken.
You're not wrong.
If I throw something into the crushing machine, the car crushing machine, that thing is now broken.
You're not wrong. There we go. Again, technically correct.
Yeah, that thing is broken. You can split hairs if you want. You have a few left.
Luxurious.
for those who aren't aware, in our Discord, if you look for it, there's a picture of Brad graduating high school with a mullet. Two comments. One, it's beautiful. Glorious mullet. Two, it is shot from what I assume is the ground, because Brad looks quite tall.
I'm deceptively tall.
Yeah. So, sorry, I'm just shit-talking you now. Just don't need to be.
I also said in Discord that I wear normal people clothes now, and that is still not true.
Well, it's still not true, but it's first what you used to wear.
Oh, no, I just wear tents.
Yeah, it was like... Yeah.
They just don't make clothes.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, I bought two t-shirts and sewed them together.
Yeah, like I'm 3 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Yeah, I bought two smalls.
Perfect.
Exactly. Nailed it.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. So Garrow, there's a problem with Garrow. And Typhus decides to solve the problem with Garrow by shoving him on a frigate called the Eisenstein. And the reason Typhus does this is, number one, he needs Garrow off of Terminus Est, his main battleship, which, by the way, he should have shot him in the head. But we'll skip that.
This is...
Yeah, the Eisenstein...
This is Bond level, don't kill the guy, Bond.
Yeah.
They could Bond have just...
level. Why are we talking about... It's Dr. Evil.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I'm saying, but in Dr. Evil, they address it. Yeah. They go... I'll just shoot him right now. Yeah.
It's a tank with sharks, with lasers. I got a gun. We can shoot him right now. That's not how we do this, Scott.
It's like, I'll go to my room right now. Yeah. I'll shoot him. Yeah. We'll go down. Yeah.
We can shoot him together. It's a bonding experience.
Yeah. So he comes up with, unfortunately, an overly elaborate plan.
Yeah. So here's how this actually goes down. So, all right. So Typhus's plan is good. Typhus's plan is, I'll put Garrow... Because Mortarian said not to kill Garrow unless I have to. So I'm going to put Garrow on this ship, the Eisenstein, which is full of virus eater bombs. They're going to shoot at Istvan. In command of the Eisenstein is Grulgor, who is already committed to Nurgle.
We're going to give his full name because no one has the, oh, that guy turned to evil. Ignatius Grulgor. Basically, his mom went, he'll be a villain. I will name him Ignatius.
Wait, Ignatius.
I'm just saying, there's never been a guy that's been the hero of the story that was named Ignatius Grulgor.
I am sure there's some like Russian short story that's like, or wherever the name Ignatius
comes from. Fine. I live in Ohio. You know what we have?
Yeah, in Ohio.
That's a bad guy.
Yeah, Ignatius is a very good name for a Russian mobster in a movie.
Yes. Like,
that's fine. And I'm by the way, keep saying Ignatius, and I realize as I'm saying that Ignatius is a Latin name. But anyway, and not Cyrillic. So sorry, guys. I just caught myself not editing that out. But so Typhus's plan is that Ignatius Grulgor will just kind of let Garrow see him doing the thing he's going to be doing and then kill.
Yeah, he's basically like, I'm going to push this button that's going to shoot these things. And would you like to do something about it?
Unfortunately, Grulgor is an idiot. So
the Dr. Evil plan?
Well, Grulgor is also a moron because he does something really stupid we'll get to in a second. Back on another ship, though, which is called the Andronicus, which is a battleship for the Emperor's Children, where Saul Tarvitz is there. Now, why Saul Tarvitz is much like Garrow, is someone who probably should have been sent down to the planet, but wasn't. Tarvitz, this is Emperor's Children. So this is Fulgrim. These
all
guys.
All glory all the time.
All glory all the time. And Tarvitz is.
By the way, before they were corrupted.
Oh, yeah. This is well before they were corrupted. They all, even before they even had Fulgrim come back in, yeah. these guys had a penchant for, like, I want glory.
Personal. Not just glory, personal glory.
Yeah. The Lord Commander of this ship is a guy by the name of Eidolon. Eidolon is one of, like, if we talk about people who want glory for themselves, Eidolon is at an 11 on this.
And the thing is that Eidolon just goes, hey guys, I won't be joining this glorious fight. And immediately Saul went, yeah, something's going on.
What do you mean? Exactly.
Like, there's no way. Like, there's zero chance this guy would punch two guys.
Because this Istvan fight is not only is it a glorious fight, but it's also an easy, glorious fight. So there's no reason for Eidolon to.
And only glory.
Yeah. Why would not be there? So Tarvitz just starts sneaking around the ship, which I just going to be candid. Over the course of this episode, you're going to hear me talk a lot of crap on Space Marine sneaking, and it's mostly because I find the concept of a sneaking Space Marine
very, very sneaky.
Yeah, I am, just because I keep thinking of it's a cartoon, like of a cartoon character, like tiptoeing and hiding behind a column that they're three times the width of. You know, it's. I'm going to be honest. I view every Space Marine as John Cena. That's how I view every Space Marine is looking. Sorry, I just do. Although Cena's too short. But anyway, so he sneaks around the Andronicus and he pretty quickly uncovers what's really going on and decides that he needs to do something about it. He also discovers that Horus has blacked out all communication from the fleet in orbit down to Istvan. So all of the people down in Istvan fighting can only communicate with each other. They cannot communicate back up to the fleet. So he does the only thing that you can do, which is he grabs a Thunderhawk, which are not a small ship, by the way.
Also not supposed to be YOLO solo flown.
Yeah. So he grabs one. You know, but he grabbed like the, he didn't grab anybody. It was just him. You're right.
It's just him.
There might be like two people. This probably.
It just rolls out.
And jumps out of this ship down towards the planet. All right. I got to admit.
This is very brave and very stupid.
Well, stupid. The idea is stupid or the writing is stupid? It's a little bit of both.
Both?
All right. Let's party.
I'm just, it's heroic, but also you just took a small but large enough to be easily targeted ship.
Yeah.
I'm going to go warn everybody when there's a entire orbit full of warships that can shoot you down in a moment.
I haven't checked out, but the last time I saw Thunderhawks are more than 2,000 points.
Yeah.
Like they're massive. I don't think they sell anymore. Thunderhawks.
It depends. Thunderhawks only 700 something. You can bring a Thunderhawk, but you can't bring the big thing.
What was the, I thought the big thing was the Thunderhawk. Okay. Yeah.
But anyway. The Thunderhawk, the biggest thing about this is it's not a fighter. How about that?
Yeah. The Thunderhawk has guns. Yeah.
You could weave and dodge. A Thunderhawk's a large transport vessel.
Exactly. So he shoots out and starts heading down towards Istvan. In order to get to Istvan, he has to go past the Eisenstein, though.
Yep.
Now, we're going to jump back to what I said earlier. Grulgor is an idiot. Grulgor, with Garrow on the bridge, suddenly says, I have to go do a thing, and leaves the bridge with all of his retune to go arm the virus bombs. The thing about doing that is that Garrow is the second highest ranked officer on the bridge.
So he's now in charge.
So the second Grulgor leaves the bridge, Garrow is now in charge of the Eisenstein. He's on the bridge when Tarvitz's ship comes by. As it comes by, the Andronicus, which is the ship that Tarvitz just left from, tells the Eisenstein to destroy it. Because apparently the Andronicus, which is a battleship, doesn't have any guns on it.
Yeah, this makes no sense.
They say, hey, you get it. Now, that flip side is Garrow and Tarvitz were friends.
Yeah, I mean, him and Saul are boy. They've been very close. They've been in front line together innumerable times at this point.
So Tarvitz radios Garrow and tells him, you know, hey, let me pass. Like, I this is what's going on. And he just tells Garrow the truth, which is Horus has betrayed the Emperor. They're about to kill all of our brothers on the planet side. I'm going down there to save them. Please don't, you know, like, let me go. And Garrow has to make a pretty quick decision here, and he decides friendship.
But he also does, this is a smart move though, because he fires on it.
Is it?
Fires
on you. Oh, that's right. I'm about to shit on this hard. All right, let's party. So what Garrow does now is he says, no problem. And he opens fire.
I actually think this is super cool.
Just behind the Thunderhawk.
Like, oh, no, I missed.
No, he doesn't say I missed. That's the thing. He then tells the Andronicus that no problem, I blew up the Thunderhawk. Because the Andronicus has no guns and apparently no sensors.
Well, that part I don't like. I like the idea. Okay, rewind. I like the idea. He shouldn't have said he blew it up. Yeah. I like the idea of him firing and missing.
Oh, I love the idea of doing that. But the problem is that I'm just confused to why a battleship can't keep track of a Thunderhawk.
Well, also the fact that one guy could be like, he's right there.
Yeah, I can see him. Yeah. Like he's flying down there. And someone says, I totally shot him. And they're saying, you totally missed.
I mean, he's again right there.
No, I didn't. Like he's right there. Also, by the way, just for you all to know, when Brad said he's right there, Brad was pointing on a podcast. Does this all the time.
Dude, I would say this is different than... Yeah.
Anyway.
We really, really need to go live again sometime.
So Garrow, after getting told from Tarvitz, now says, hey, where did Grulgor go? So he grabs, and this is literally in the book, three dudes, and leaves the bridge to go down to the bombing bay to find out what's going on. They get in there, and I give Grulgor credit. They catch Grulgor arming virus bombs, Grulgor puts no effort into it. Oh, what do you mean is the question. Grulgor goes, I'm going to kill all of them.
He goes, I'm arming the virus bombs to kill everyone. And he just what? Like,
yeah.
What? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. John Heavy sigh for what happens next. They then begin a fight in the bombing bay where they're shooting at each other. And I'm not joking about what happens next. A bullet is fired. It ricochets off of someone and hits one of the virus bombs, which makes it detonate. Now, I understand not everyone. I don't have a military background, but I understand the basics of how a bomb works. It's not contact. Bombs don't work they don't have a little bit on the front that you touch and the bomb explodes.
Technology is...
Like,
went a little bit backwards.
I don't think that's how landmines work, and I believe that's it.
I mean, that's how it works if you pack gunpowder into the top of a...
Even then, it doesn't have a point that moves in, so
it would have
ricocheting
to be
bolt.
On fire.
Yeah. Hit the tip of a virus bomb, and the virus bomb
with
went...
With its wick.
Yeah, with its wick. Burned down. Yeah, and then the virus bomb... detonated. Sorry, it's just dumb. Oh, but don't worry, we're not dumb with this. I made an ATM reference, it's fine. Don't worry, we're not done with this. Garrow and their crew, when this ricochet happened, were just standing next to the airlock. So one of the three people with him shoves the other ones through the airlock and then closes the door while he dies to the virus bomb. Anyway, this succeeds in killing Grulgor for now and all of his buddies. Garrow then runs back to the bridge and takes back control of the ship.
So this should have wrecked the ship. We continue.
Yeah. The fun story about this is that he does this. There's still Death Guard all over the ship, by the way. Who are all traitors. But none of them are on the bridge, so sucks to be them. As he's trying to figure out what to do next, another Thunderhawk, it's actually the same Thunderhawk, is coming back from the surface. Because I have to give, it was Tarvitz, right? Mm-hmm. Tarvitz stayed on planet to fight the traitors. But
he's a psycho.
Yeah. Yaktan Cruz, which is spelled Q-R-U-Z-E. So I'm not mispronouncing it this time, like we did with Conrad. I call him Cruz.
Still doing it.
Yeah.
I'm never changing. I want everybody to know. So I read that in my mind as that for more than a decade now, never
changed. Yeah. So Yaktan plus a few others are now on a Thunderhawk coming back up, and they're telling Garrow, hey, we got to get out of here. We've got all the evidence we need.
Oh, they are doing the whole Indiana Jones, start the engine.
Start the engine. Yeah. Go.
Shit is going down.
Yeah. And they come back up, crash land into the Eisenstein effect.
I don't even think they land. They drive their ship into the
Eisenstein.
Like in the general location of the landing bay, the docking bay.
And Garrow just starts turning the Eisenstein to go jump back towards Terra. As the Eisenstein begins to move, apparently all of this stuff, because no one has sensors, is completely amiss to the entirety of the trader fleet, including Typhus, who's sitting on top, who's sitting on Terminus Est, who sees none of the Thunderhawks do anything.
I'm going to give this, they give it the Dr. Evil moments, but I do think that he is wildly overconfident because this is their moment. They're doing the Darth Maul. We're finally going to reveal ourselves to the Jedi. We'll finally have our revenge.
Yeah, you have radar. There's a dude watching radar.
Sure. But I'm just saying, it only makes sense if you
go. Or is this a space balls that got jammed?
It did get, right. Making old people references. That's an old people
reference, but it's still a good movie. But, it's actually not, but it's very funny.
But they're going to go to Plaid. But the biggest thing about that is I think that in my mind, in how I read it,
make some sense. Yeah.
I fill in a lot of gaps with this, but in my mind, they really have that overconfidence of this is the day that we make our move. We move on with all of our plans.
Yeah.
And I think that he kind of thought that obviously everything's going to go because I'm a bad guy.
Oh, because was he monologuing on the bridge? Is that what's going on?
He's just monologuing on the bridge. Yeah.
So as it begins to move, Typhus realizes that he hasn't heard from Grulgor in a while, and that's kind of weird. So he begins calling the Eisenstein, and Garrow lets it go to voicemail. And
Garrow should have definitely done the Star Wars. And
hello? Yeah, no problem
no
here.
No problem here.
Yeah, exactly.
Reactor leak.
Yeah, hello, I got to go. So Garrow, because what Garrow does is, actually, to be fair, what Garrow really does is he does radio out that there's an issue with his reactor. And the rule in the Space Marines is if you have an issue with your reactor, you're supposed to pull away from the fleet.
So you don't blow yourself up.
So he raised up. Typhus is kind of like, was that Garrow? Why wasn't that Grulgor? And then so he then calls down.
It just goes, you should have probably had anyone but you.
Yeah.
I stand next to you.
Yeah.
All the time. I definitely know your shitty voice.
Yeah. And so Grulgor, without Grulgor being there, Typhus knows something's up and he just turns that. So he begins to go after the Eisenstein
and
opens fire.
We have to go into this again. The Eisenstein, beep. I'm making so many hand gestures right now.
Yeah. Brad is literally, you guys could be missing out more on this is if Brad actually knew sign language and was just doing that right now. Instead of speaking.
What I'm trying to get with, I'm showing different sizes.
About to hold up a Dr. Pepper for size. That was about to happen, guys. A Dr. Pepper. That was going to be, for those of you who are international and going, Americans have a weird measurement system. We are about to get a Dr. Pepper versus, I don't know what, a medicine ball? Is that what we're going to do over here?
Which is fairly accurate, by the way.
Yeah, no one knows how big the table is. They probably are aware of a Dr. Pepper.
So all I'm saying is a Dr. Pepper can versus a table is about the difference in the size in the Terminus Est versus the Eisenstein. It's a battleship versus maybe a frigate.
For those of you not in the U.S., Dr. Pepper is a soda we drink here. Brad's forgotten that it's not even an international soda that he's drinking. You want to do a Faygo next? make this even more.
I was regional. Trying to think of a different. I'm just going to say pop, and I'm going to choose a local
pop. Did you just use the word pop?
I said I'm going to use the word pop.
You understand pop is actually even less local.
That's what I'm saying. It's super local.
God, this is what happened.
Faygo and pop.
This is what happened to record in the Midwest. They don't understand there's other parts of the world.
What's scary? I got to map this.
Exactly.
There be dragons.
Anyway,
here.
To Brad's point, I'm going to make it a little bit easier. The Eisenstein is a small craft. It's a frigate. It's maybe a tenth the size of the Terminus Est and has armor and shields. But not for a battleship, which, as we've discovered, battleships have crappy radar. But apparently, at least the Terminus Est, unlike the Andromachus, has guns on it.
and they all just the guns.
Yeah. Oh, Typhus is not taking a risk.
They drop bows.
Yeah. And this ship just gets wrecked. Funny story. There are a bunch of Death Guard on Eisenstein who have no idea any of this stuff's happening and now just start getting shot at. But in the result of the bombardment, all the astropaths die. All but one navigator dies. And the shields are about to fail. At this point, Garrow does, you know, what Garrow does, which is hero stuff. And he just tells the remaining navigator, put us into the warp.
It where? Now. He goes, I don't care. Yeah, basically, it doesn't matter. Anywhere you send us is still better than where we're right.
Yeah.
We are right yeah. now.
Get me into the warp.
Which he's not wrong.
Oh, this is
if this goes on for six more seconds.
Yeah, this is hero stuff, what he does here. It is fantastic. And they do. They jump into the Immaterium. Problem, though, is that the shields were irreparably damaged, which apparently shares the same generator as the Geller field. So
for the Imperium are trash. Yeah,
they enter the warp with no Geller field, and Nurgle is very aware of them and instantly start. So Grulgor has a rough run, by the way. So Grulgor has just been consumed by a Life Eater virus.
Probably not the best way to
die. Not a great way to die. Nurgle looks at him and goes, yeah, that one. Nurgle converts Grulgor into the first ever Plague Marine. He resurrects him.
The best part is he doesn't resurrect him as Grulgor. He resurrects him as a plague-infested Marine. You're like, you could have just made me come back. You're like, nah.
Nurgle doesn't play like that. So, and then Nurgle also then begins reanimating the corpses of all the traitor space marines on the ship. Oddly, like, they write it in a way that it's not entirely clear. Are they all plague marines? Are they zombies?
I think everybody, this is again, my reading.
Please.
I think Grulgor is the only plague marine and everybody else is just a zombie. Because the reason I say this is that Garrow and friends dispatch these guys like that.
Yeah, except for Grulgor.
That's my point.
Exactly.
So, is that I think that these guys were slow move. They're slower moving. They're mm-hmm. just the reanimated corpses of Marines without all the power of Marines. Mm-hmm. Because in the books, they snuff these guys out.
Sort of. Because they pop right back up. That's
what I'm saying. Yeah. They put them down.
Yeah, yeah. They do drop them. Because
they come to the bridge.
Yeah, Garrow.
And they go, oh shit. And drop them.
Yeah. Garrow. And there's like only a few. It's Garrow. And like three or five guys are just picking these guys off as they come through. But eventually Grulgor gets onto the bridge too. Because Nurgle's there. As they're killing these space marines and these zombies. And they're coming back up. Literally, Garrow, they're running out of bullets. And it all comes down to Garrow, and actually, I forget the name of the guy, but he'll come up in a minute in later part of the notes. Grulgor actually stabs one of the Space Marines with his plague knife and begins converting him, at which point Garrow realizes they have to get out of the warp now.
Well, they're just not going to win.
Well, because he realizes that's where the power is coming
right.
from.
It's coming from has unlimited ability to screw with us.
Exactly. So, we've never covered this before, but getting in and out of the warp, and we're going to do a cast on warp travel, is not an easy path. It's slow. There's a care. You have to move your... It's not like you press a button and you go... You can press a button and go in and out of the warp.
Yeah, but the navigators just die a lot
from that. And so doing this, they drop out of the warp back into the Immaterium, and their navigator just melts his brain. He falls down.
He just dies.
But the flip side... All of Nurgle's power also disappears. And you've got...
We're not in the war.
Yeah. And the problem with being a plague marine, in the case of Garrow, or a zombie, is that when your body's made up of warp energy, and now there's no warp energy, you're not much. And Garrow just easily just kills Grulgor again.
Yeah. Karate kicks these guys in the face.
And all the guys. So now the good news is all of their enemies on the ship are dead. The bad news is that the ship is now adrift. It's hundreds of light years from Terra.
Well, they're not 100% even where they are at this point in time.
Yeah, they're in the middle. It's the whole galaxy. They're in the middle of nowhere. The entire galaxy is in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
They're not near Earth. Let's put it that way. They've got no navigator, no astropath.
God damn it.
And so they can't even call for help. What?
Continue.
Yeah. The worst part, though, is that the ship's also too damaged even for an FTL journey. So Garrow's just stuck. But again, Garrow's pretty good at his stuff. So what's Garrow do? He decides, I'm just going to make a beacon. So he overloads the warp drive.
This is also a crazy plan, because if this no one sees this, then he just slowly dies.
Well, he's going to do that anyway. The problem is his options were to jump back into the warp, which that didn't go well last time with no navigator.
Well, no navigator and no Gellerfield.
Yeah. So just
like, hey, man, we should just wander in hell and see how it works out for us.
Yeah. See. Oh, man. What is that? What's the movie?
Event Horizon.
Yeah. See Event Horizon. Yeah.
I mean, if you play BJ3, they also do this with the ship in hell at the beginning of the game.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That part I played.
Yeah.
I got through the first act and then started playing different.
They legitimately go. We need to go. Where should we go? Anywhere but here.
This place sucks.
Yeah. Like, pull the thing. Do I know how to run this ship? No, but it will still make it go not here.
So they expel the warp drive. It overloads and it just explodes, creating a massive flash that the entire galaxy can see. And if you followed some of our earlier casts, you can also see from outside of the galaxy. So a certain race outside the galaxy likely saw this flash. It works. Rogel Dorn is wandering around. And
as he wants to do.
Yeah, well, he comes to the rescue, like he always does.
Yay.
Because you know who
he always does.
It's true. If you're in a pickle, Brad, you know who you rely on? Good old Rogel Dorn. He will pick you up and immediately place you in prison. Which is exactly what Rogel Dorn does.
He sucks so much.
Rogel Dorn picks
literally
up the crew.
Could have helped so much. After this heroic journey, Rogel Dorn's stupid ass shows up, and you're like, Rogel, here's all the things that happened. Let me tell you the warning I'm giving. You can help the Imperium. And Rogel goes, I suck, and I'd like to continue sucking. Might not be the exact dialogue in the book, but this is what I read.
Yeah, what he does is Rogel immediately imprisons all of them and blows up the Eisenstein. But he does take them all towards Sol, then stops just outside of Sol and shoves the three or five prisoners, I forget how many it was, in the Sisters of Silence's citadel.
God, I hate him so much.
It's all right.
Not like Erebus hate, but like he's 20th on my list of Primarchs out of 18.
Well, there's 20.
The two guys that are redacted, I still think are better because they didn't do anything.
Really? You like him more than Lorgar?
I don't count Lorgar. So finally, he's fine. He's 19. On the list of 20.
I was going to say, like, Lorgar just serves no purpose.
I mean, he's...
You want a Primarch who gets beat up in hand-to-hand combat?
I joke about Rogel Dorn, and he does a bunch of dumb shit, which is why I don't like it.
Yeah.
But he is super powerful and heroic.
Yeah.
Lorgar
loses every fist fight. Like, I'm surprised.
I don't even know if he's a Primarch. Yeah, he's just some guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Lorgar met one of, like, the Phoenix Lords. I'm pretty sure Phoenix Lords would just beat him up.
Oh, like, laugh.
Yeah.
He sucked. He's terrible.
So
I make, again, for everybody that loves the Imperial Fist, I will continue to shit on him because I hate his storylines. He's a bad dude.
But he's awesome. Yeah. Like when Rogel has to fight,
he wrecks shop.
Yeah. Every fight Rogel Dorn gets in has music behind it.
Always boss music.
Oh, we're doing this. Okay.
I give shit about it, but like he's a bad dude.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes these books are the reason I don't like Rogel Dorn. Because you're just like, dude, seriously, just listen for 5 seconds and we can help shit out.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
What ends up happening next, though, is one of the guys, as we mentioned, that was part of Garrow's crew, got stabbed by a Grulgor. And he's just struggling and in massive amounts of pain. And the Sisters of Silence
No one notices this, by the way.
Well, they do. They just don't care. The problem is that he's in a prison. He's in a Sisters of Silence prison. And apparently it's not strong enough to keep Nurgle out. So he eventually just embraces Nurgle.
Of course he does.
And he's Nurgle turns him
tortured into, every day.
Yeah, turns him
into... Well, yeah, like, hey, man, you know what happens when I let flies slowly eat my body while replacing it with acid for pus. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for some reason, things don't go well. Yeah. So he then goes, this guy converts over to a demon who actually comes up a couple times, ends up getting resurrected throughout the heresy, blah, blah, blah.
Like five times, actually.
Yeah, I don't actually find any of the stories good. But he kills two other Astartes. Actually, I think he might kill a couple sisters and then goes on a rampage to the Citadel. Garrow sees it, apparently is able to pursue him.
Garrow YOLO solos this guy.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. They
actually run outside. This is actually cool. They run outside on Luna. So on the surface of Luna, Garrow kills this demon.
Like Ninja Warrior style. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Garrow's awesome, by the way.
No, Garrow's incredible. So this kind of, we're going to take a stop there.
This is such a backflip into what we're doing right now.
No, but it actually makes complete sense. The truth is that Garrow now is going to serve a much greater purpose for the Emperor.
True story.
The way we're going to get that is that before we get in the next bit, just a little reminder. Up until the Horus Heresy, the existence of Chaos was known basically by the Emperor, Malkador, and the Custodes. I don't think anyone else.
Like
obviously Lorgar and Erebus knew about it.
There's people that know about it, but there's no one officially knows.
Yeah,
How about this? If you stood in front of the Emperor, you wouldn't say that you knew.
Yeah, the only people who officially who spoke about their existence were Malkador, the Emperor, the Custodes, and that woman whose name I'm forgetting that is guarding the gate to the hell. So because of this, the Emperor never made a plan for what to do against the forces of Chaos. He seemed to just rely on, like, I'm just going to ban religion and hope this all works itself out.
He used his ostrich defense.
Yeah. No, it was going to be. However, he had Malkador. And Malkador loves a plan, especially one that sacrifices thousands of people.
Are you A-team referencing twice in one cast? I love it when a plan comes together.
Oh, wow. I really did. Yeah. Go team. It was a lot of my childhood. Once word reaches the Emperor of Horus's rebellion, the Emperor knows the truth that this is not a rebellion of Horus. This is Chaos.
Well, it's a rebellion led by Chaos.
Yeah.
With pawns.
Exactly.
We decided to play chess, and here's the pieces. Mm-hmm. And here's the Chaos pieces. Here's the Imperium pieces. Let's go.
Yeah. And the issue they have is especially what just happened on Luna, where you had someone turn into a demon this close to the soul, really jacks up some of their plans. So the Emperor and Malkador, probably Valdor too, decide they have to make a choice. And the choice they go with is do not tell the Imperium the truth about Chaos.
Also, they'd have to say, we knew about this the whole time. We've been lying about it the whole time. And it would splinter at this point in time.
I also think the problem is that it also, truthfully, Chaos, as we've said before, is a lot like vampires. You have to invite them in. Life in the Imperium is not great at this stage. Telling them that there's some great evil power out there, we just invite more cultists. So I actually agree with them that you should not just tell the Imperium.
How you get it. On these terrible worlds, you're like, there's an option that doesn't include this.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it? I'm good.
Yeah. So Malkador takes the lead here because if it was Valdor, he probably would just stabbed everybody.
Twice, in case they were
killed. Exactly. And he gathers all the survivors of the Eisenstein, Garrow, Cruz, Kendall, who's, we'll deal with her another time, and tells them that they've got a plan.
Which is why these guys are so much cooler than Rogel, because they knew that someone had information that was vital to the survival of the Imperium.
Right. They're being told, the quote is, and I like this quote, the men and women of inquisitive nature, hunters who might seek the witch, the traitor, the mutant, and the Xeno. This is the formation of the Inquisition. It starts now. And these are the original three founders. However, he then pulls Garrow aside and says, I actually have a special mission for you, because he realizes Garrow may be the most loyal person in the Imperium.
Also, the thing about Garrow, and they don't go into this enough in the books, but I think one of the reasons, for me, again, this is me giving the Brad version of books. I feel that he already saw that what will eventually be the Aegeus and everything else I think that he already sees in, because you got to remember that both Malkador and the Emperor can see more into you than you can see into you. They can see you in your warp entity and everything else. I think that he had an innate resistance to chaos.
That they knew.
That you could just see. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, I'm going to choose you for this because I already know that you have.
You can do this. Exactly. Right. So this creates the Knights Errant. The first thing Malkador does is he changes Garrow's army. He takes off all the Death Guard from it, which is probably a good call, and puts and puts on Malkador's sigil, which is critical because Malkador's sigil means Garrow can now go where Malkador could go. He can go anywhere, command anything.
Which is huge.
He has
a get out of jail free card galaxy.
Yeah, and he has one of the most powerful sigils in the galaxy. Like, I can go anywhere, command anything, do anything. He's kind of in line with the custode now in that level of, like,
you know, you're not doing injustice when you say what he does, though. So I want to jump a little bit on. Come on. You know, you son of a bitch, I'm in. That's what Garrow does. And that's what he does.
Oh, Garrow, yeah, it's fair.
No, but I'm saying he starts going around the galaxy in a montage, mm-hmm. grabbing people. And they speed this up in the book, but that's what he's doing. He does a heist movie.
Yeah, this is
cool. He gathers a team.
The first thing that we have to kind of jump back into a little bit, we covered this on the Ahriman cast, was the Council of Nicaea.
So this went great. Sorry. Yes,
the Council of Nicaea. I'm just gonna quick hit this for everybody. This is when the Emperor brought everyone together and decided what to do about Psykers. And the Emperor decreed that we will no longer utilize Psykers anywhere. So all of the space factions.
No reasons.
Continue. Yeah, no reasons given at all. Yeah, just so all of the legions tell they don't kill their Psykers, but they tell them you're not allowed to use the powers, and using your powers is viewed as a negative. The traitor legions decided not to follow this very hard. So the reason I bring this up is, for the first place Garrow goes is to the world of Kalth, which is where the Ultramarines are. The Ultramarines were sent to Kalth to deal with, I believe it was an orc invasion, and it was not. It was a trap, and it's demons and word bearers.
Well, and word bearers who use the most demons.
Yeah, exactly. Rubio is a incredibly powerful Psyker within the ranks of the Ultramarines, but he, again, doesn't use them. Garrow arrives, and this is why Garrow's a badass. Garrow arrives and tells Rubio, hey, Malkador has summoned you. You have to get out of here. And Rubio just says, no, I can't abandon my brothers. So Garrow goes, all right.
Cool, let's just fight.
I'll fight with you. I will stand next to you.
He also makes this decision instantly.
Yeah, okay. Let's fight together, which is just awesomely badass. The reason this matters a lot more is during the battle, the Ultramarines get overwhelmed by the word bearers because they bring cataphractic terminators, which is what Abaddon was. These things are nasty. These terminators, again, because this is back when it's just reading lore, terminators actually work. As they're about to lose, as always, Rubio just unleashes a psychic torrent and collapses a tunnel on top of the Terminators, because Dreadnought armor is not impervious to dirt.
Well, it's impervious to damage. A lot of them didn't die. They also weren't going anywhere.
I guess that's fair.
They could have been completely fine,
yeah,
except for the fact that they're never leaving.
Yeah, the part that I don't like is that Rubio at the end of it is like, he feels ashamed of using his psychic powers and is sad because some of the other Ultramarines give him a dirty look, which is just stupid. But anyway, he joins Garrow to become, to now be his buddy on his buddy quest.
Yeah, again, he's doing a heist, so mm-hmm. he needs to gather his team.
The next place Garrow goes... Also, I want to point something out because this is important. We talked about this during the Horus Heresy, that during the Horus Heresy, the warp storms were insane and no one could go anywhere. Apparently, Garrow had some special extra thing because
he goes everywhere.
He goes Kalth, which is on the far side of the galaxy.
Oh, he does this four times.
Yeah. Way. And then jumps. Yeah.
He does season 8 Game of Thrones style travel. Yeah.
And then just jumps.
He just teleports everywhere.
Yeah. All right. Now I'm back on Sol. Because back on Sol, a fleet of ships have arrived, which has a single world eater named Varin and a bunch of White Scars.
I do love the fact that everybody turned to chaos and one guy was like, kind of think this is jacked up,
man. Yeah, What are you guys doing? Varen's the loyalist out of the group. So Garrow, Rubio, and some custodes board the ships. And they're kind of like going through it. The custodes, of course, are on team. Let's just stab all of them. That's their vote. Like,
but
just,
you know, we make fun of it. They weren't wrong.
They weren't. There was, they were 99% correct.
Yeah, there was one dude.
They would have been off by one.
Yeah. They would not have noticed. There was a guy that they were wrong about.
And suddenly the White Scar traders do attack. Because as we said in a prior episode, the White Scars were actually a weird legion where the majority of them stayed loyal, but a group of them did go traitor.
And they also deuced out.
Because the White Scars all had warrior lodges.
Just it's a goddamn good idea.
It's a terrible idea. It doesn't work. Anyway, they attack. Varen jumps up and saves Garrow and Rubio, and they all escape together. So now there are knight errants.
Trips.
Yeah.
You know, you just did a Brad. You didn't say the number.
You're right. You're right.
You showed the number to me.
There are knight errants. I held up a three. Thanks, Brad. There are now three knight errants.
Yes.
Yeah, you're creating problems. All right, so this is the next one is actually a bit more interesting to me, not to brag, because it involves Rogel Dorn.
And they're stupid. You know what? I'm not even going to say stupid. This thing's pretty awesome.
This is cool.
So I wanted to talk shit about it, but the Phalanx is objectively,
yeah.
This thing's like a cruising Death Star.
Yeah, well, it's a Death Star. So it's a star fortress called the Phalanx that the Imperial Fists have. Garrow is sent there in secret. So he sneaks onto it. Again, sneaks on to a Imperial Fist ship.
Obi-Wan's onto the Death Star to turn off the tractor beams. Thank you very much.
Fortress building legion in the entire galaxy.
I feel like I
the
just
best
said,
defenders.
Obi-Wan turned off the tractor beam. That's all I'm saying.
On this, Rogel Dorn has imprisoned all of the psykers of his entire legion. And there's one guy
named Rogel Dorn is stupid shit. Yeah.
Well,
that guy is so tough and so dumb.
I'm going to disagree with you here. We'll get to that story, to why in a second. Massic is one such that Garrow's been sent to go grab. So Garrow sneaks around the ship and eventually gets to Massic and says, "Hey, you've been summoned by Malkador. We need to go. And Massic says, "No, like I'm loyal. My Primarch told me I'm staying here. I'm staying here." And Rogel Dorn arrives. And looks at Garrow and just says, "All right, come here, you," and brings him to the office for a stern talking to. A couple things I like about this story.
He does at least reference the fact that didn't I leave you in a prison?
Well, two things. One, I do like that upon seeing Rogel, because Massic hasn't seen Rogel in like hundreds of years, says, Primarch or something like that, "Sir, how goes the Great Crusade?" And Rogel's response is, "It has become complicated," which I like that line.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah, I like that line a lot. So it's a really good line of like, it has become complicated.
I mean, and the thing is, okay, Rogel's not being a complete ass.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the way he's going about it.
You've made that clear.
But he is, and he could have told these guys, which he does not.
Nope.
He wants to keep his psykers ready for the battle so they're uncorrupted by the time the big battle comes.
He knew. Rogel knew the psykers. There was a danger with the psykers. And so he figured, "I'm going to shelter them away. And when we need them, they will be here. I'm not going to lose
any psykers." Which he could have mentioned to any of them, by the way.
Look, Rogel likes his dad.
Jesus. Hey, man, you know what would have been cool is if I wasn't just sequestered in a cell for it, to me, no reason whatsoever.
So anyway, long story short, no Massic, but kind of a cool story. The next one, as we just mentioned, you know, no warp travel for everyone else, but Garrow goes from Saul to Istvan III. So he now is going to warp behind Horus to a planet he left to go pick a dude up.
Again, heist movie, assembling his crew. Okay. By the way, this is also awesome because this is a ballsy maneuver because at this point, they know that Chaos has corrupted them. Mm-hmm. Chaos is the most power in the warp. Let's just make a long warp jump.
Yeah.
And just figure it out.
Yeah. So Garrow and Rubio arrive on Istvan III they actually find some survivors, some human survivors who somehow survived the virus and the bombing and blah, blah, and a full-blown assault by traitor Marines. And Gary and Rubio are told by these survivors that there's this evil beast which is attacking them. A little bit later, they see a beast from a distance and realize the beast is an Astartes. And Gary and Rubio engage the beast and it runs away after it killed some of the humans. When they look down, though, Garrow recognizes some of the humans that the beast killed have the mark of Nurgle on them. And they then, of course, immediately rise up because GW writing, and Garrow and Rubio have to fight these zombies, at which point the beast arrives and kills the zombies again.
Who's the beast?
Logan.
That's right.
It's Garville Logan.
Garville Logan.
Yeah.
Bazoo!
Garville Logan.
Little wolf.
Yeah, and Logan, Garrow speaks to him and actually brings him, Grover Logan, back to, like, sanity, effectively. And now we've added another nightmare.
Well, he is in a nightmare until he shows up.
Yeah, it's so...
He's just killing zombies nonstop every day in a shattered world.
Mm-hmm. They then jump back to Seoul and go, all right, now this time we're going to go to Caliban.
Can we skip this part?
No, because it's we need this.
You're gonna introduce somebody. You're gonna harp so much on this.
I'm using it to introduce somebody. So apparently, at this stage, Garrow's plot armor was too heavy, so they had to let Garvel Logan and Yakton Cruz do this trip. So their goal, they were sent by Malkador to determine if the Dark Angels were loyal or traitor. And when they get there, there's this guy there named Luther, who's just a guy. That's all he is.
Damn it.
If you don't get that reference, go listen to the Dark Angels cast as I went off on Luther. Luther is not chaos at this point, but he's still very anti-lion, and he doesn't even know what's going on. So he's
already been banished at this point.
Yeah, but he hasn't turned to chaos yet.
I mean, he has.
Well, I know, I agree with you. But in the books, he hasn't.
Yeah, I was just
so Luther's trying to figure out what's going on. So Luther captures Logan. I don't know, and starts interrogating him. But what he doesn't know is that Logan, because he's so good, is attracting the attention of the Watchers in the Dark. So while Logan is imprisoned, the Watchers of the Dark free him, and he reunites with Cruz to make their escape. As they're making their escape, he gets trapped by the Dark Angels. And the whole reason I'm telling this story is because something else happens that's setting up a future cast for us. They then were aided in an escape they killed one of the Dark Angels to escape by what I consider one of the worst lore to tabletop model. Because I can't think of a time that the Cypher model has been of any value in the tabletop, but I love Cypher in the lore.
Cypher the lore is amazing.
That's the thing.
Third edition, he was still terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could only lead him in certain armies.
Yeah.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah. Cypher's been useless in the tabletop forever, and he's so important in the lore. So Cypher, the reason he's I like Cypher.
Into the throne.
Yeah, and the reason I love Cypher is Cypher helps them escape, gets them to the surface, and as they're about to go, Garrow says to Cypher, come join us, be a knight errant with us. And Cypher says, I'm going to protect the Imperium in my own way, and goes off. And that is exactly what Cypher does.
I'm assuming he also put the cloak, the cloak on.
And for those who don't know who Cypher is one of the most unfulfilling but amazing characters in all of the lore, because he just randomly pops up in these critical moments to do really cool
stuff.
He's
also a neutral Jedi, basically.
Yeah, Cypher's awesome, and there's been multiple Cyphers potentially. That's the other piece too. We don't know the Cypher. So I did the whole story just so I could say the word Cypher. Now the Knights Errant go all over the place. They go to Mars and fight the Dark Mechanicum. They recruit a bunch of more members. My favorite one of all of the stories that they have in this, because they're just completely useless, is they go to Baal while Sanguinius is fighting, against Cobb-Aden, and tell everyone at Baal that Sanguinius and their legion have fallen to a demonic invasion. So you guys need to come with us back to Seoul, to which the Blood Angels almost murder them, because how dare you say that? Just in time for Sanguinius to call and say, hey guys, good news. We had a big fight, but we're good. We're on our way back. It's a useless story.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
But it does push the fact that why they got so affected by his death, because Sanguinius was a boss.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, Sanguinius was a big deal. But I just, that whole story, I was like, why are we doing
like them
this?
Going, abandon your Primarch. They went, you must be crazy.
Yeah, not that you're going to be. We will murder you if you tell us to do this one more time. Like we're done.
Just don't put that idea out there. We'll just cut you down.
Yeah. The next one that they did, and we covered this a bit before with Leman Russ stabbing Horus. But before we did that, before that happened, they decided to go and try and kill. Well, it was a two-part mission to go and kill Horus. So the Knight Errants decide they know that there's an attack on Moloch that Horus is part of. And they have a two-part mission. One, go kill Horus. But two, mark the way to Horus so that we can, if it doesn't work, we can go kill Horus later. Now, the reason I'm going to do this story real quick is because I have to talk some shit. And this story was terribly written, so I'm going to do it.
Are you going to talk about more sneaky space marines?
Yeah. I'm going to talk about... So the plan here is for 10 space marines who are knight errants
to board... Some of them are wearing Terminator
armor. Wearing Terminator armor, yeah. To board the vengeful spirit.
Horus's flagship.
Horus is the flagship of the Traitor Legions. And sneak in and kill Horus. So how do they do this? Well, simple, Brad. They have a stealth vessel. I don't know what that means. I genuinely don't know what that means. They have a stealth vessel. Oh, okay. Problem solved. So that's how that works, apparently. Yeah. Hey, don't worry. This stealth vessel gets stealthier and worse. So... They do successfully, thanks to their stealth vessel, sneak onto the most important ship of all of the Traitor Legions.
Dude, shit goes bad.
Oh yeah, they make it look like three. They make it like three, like door locks in, and go like, oh, now we're under attack.
Yeah, like instantly, everything goes awry.
Yeah, and they just start getting wrecked, and like four of them just die before they get captured and brought in front of Horus. What saves them is that Garvel Loken is here. And Garvel was...
He is one of the favorites of Horus.
Yeah.
Garvel, again, Loken was a Luna Wolf, which is Horus's chapter. You know what I mean? So...
And they were friends. Horus and Garvel were friends.
Well, he's part of the Mournival.
Exactly.
Which is his inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the beginning of the word. But the thing about Horus, and Horus... has a real reason to think this. Horus, again, has a magic power to
This is not people... Mortarian here. Yeah. We're talking about Horus.
Horus, his biggest power, every Primarch has a power, their go-to thing. And this isn't a chaos power. This is his Primarch power. His Primarch power is to get others to just agree with him.
Yep. He
legitimately has a magic power to do that. So he is... pretty goddamn confident that he's going to make him see his way.
Yeah, it doesn't. But this fight breaks. When I say fight, it's not a thing. An argument breaks out between.
There's not a fight.
Yeah,
Horus would have.
Grabbed him and killed him. But Garvel and Horus start kind of just verbally getting into it, where Garvel is yelling at him. This creates a distraction, and the other knight errants on the ship are able to escape their captors. Now. I recognize how stupid that sounds. Don't worry, it's about to get stupider because the aforementioned stealth ship has now moved around the ship, and there are windows that look out into space because that's what you need in a spaceship. And the stealth ship blows out the windows with its guns.
And then they fly out the windows.
Yeah, and then everyone gets sucked out into space, and the cell ship picks them up and transports them back to Terra.
And they escape.
So, yeah.
Heist style, baby.
And that actually hurt my soul to say it out loud. I mean, like, we're talking about a stealth ship, so okay. The traitors are aware that they've been infiltrated, and no one went, hey, I wonder how they got there. Let's go find that ship. The ship continues to be stealth, has guns powerful enough to blow a hole in a battleship, by the way, or not in a battleship, They just, battleships apparently are built with flimsy windows. Is it just actual, was it double pane glass that we're working with here? That's what we have.
Single pane.
Single pane. Yeah. Single pane. Yeah, we got single pane glass. That's all it is. Oh, so anyway, this mission's a pretty bad failure, sort of, except
it's not, though.
It ends up, so the mission itself is a failure, but the overall, the secondary missions is a success, because this is how.
Secondary mission was a wild success.
Yes, because this is how Lehman Russ gets onto the Vengeful Spirit, stabs Horus, which causes Horus to have to give up even more of his soul to Chaos, which probably creates the hubris within Horus.
Well, no, because Horus becomes, he went from constantly at conflict, but being Horus,
yeah,
to being a puppet, which a puppet of Horus is actually wildly less powerful than Horus, completely Horus. Because
in the end, Horus's hubris is what took him down. His turning off the shields to invite the emperor. That's hubris. That would never have happened if he hadn't, given more of his soul to Chaos. So
true.
In that realm, it was a really good move. But this mission didn't work. So the last mission that went on is a completely useless mission that they wrote into a book just to fill time, where they begin searching for all the shards of Magnus around the universe. Two things on that. One, every shard they find, they fail to capture. Every single one. And two, there was a shard just sitting on Earth the whole time that Malkador already had.
This is why when we were talking about this one, I said, well, if they did absolutely nothing, there would be no change.
Yeah, because the only positive they got out of this was it did give them, very long story short, we'll cover it later, one of the first Inquisitors actually came out of this, because there was a guy who got possessed by one of the shards of Magnus, then depossessed thanks to Ahriman depossessing him. Not as a favor, by the way.
No, he took the shard from him.
And then
he took the possession away because he didn't want to leave any power behind.
And this then created a guy who is immune to demonic possession. This
accidentally.
Accidentally. All of this that we just described was going on to the backdrop of the Horus Heresy. Just before Horus enters Sol, demons and cultists start popping up all over Terra. And it was Erebus, because of course it was freaking Erebus. But the Knights Errant are now on Terra, and they're the one, they actually fight these demons back. At the end of these battles against them, out of nowhere, Malkador arrives and says to everyone, come with me, you're going to go meet the Emperor. And the Emperor says something really critical. It's going to set up our next cast. The Emperor tells them that, their part as Knight Errants, their part against Horus is concluded, which we'll get to some of the guys in a second. He needs them to focus on the real enemy, which is the warp. They are going, the warp. And so they are going to stand as the protection of humanity from destruction via the warp.
Use the line, bulwark of humanity. Yeah,
they're going to become the bulwark of humanity.
He specifically says that.
Fine. The Emperor tells, so he selects 9 of them to go become these titans for humanity. One of them, Garrow, declines because Garrow says, yeah, there's no scenario I'm not going to go fight Horus. And these are all teleported at this moment to a hidden moon base on Saturn to later become the Grey Knights. So that's why we did this whole cast, guys, was we had to set up where the Grey Knights came from. Yeah. So that's today's cast. On next cast, we'll dive into the Grey Knights themselves, their growth from heresy to modern times, equipment, key figures, all that stuff. But with that, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.